Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Power Reclamation Show, where we explore the mysteries, heartbreaks, and resiliency of the human experience. Together, we'll focus on rewilding ourselves through raising consciousness and dismantling domestication. This is a collective journey of challenging hierarchical systems of power over, as well as our own personal conditioning and limiting belief systems. This show is about embodying the power of love, presence, and our own inner authority. So you may have caught a previous episode that was with both Marie and Hulani, and in which we talked about sacred sisterhood and the shadow of sisterhood and competition. And we decided to get back together because we had another topic that was really dear to all of our hearts, and it was about feeling exiled and the power of moving from a form of exile that feels really painful and ostracizing to discovering, as Hulani puts it in our conversation, the transformation into holy exile, which is the recognition of, well, those of us who are often seen as an outsider, an exile, or the one who are going to challenge the status quo, we often can feel really alone, and there's an isolation in the nature of this. And yet, it's in all three of us, we talked about how the nature of that alienation is actually what has turned us so far in towards the silence and solitude of our own being that we have found a quality of belonging that really feels more unshakable. Because as most of us know, as beautiful as human connection is, it ultimately has a destabilizing quality just because of the nature of us, you know, the majority of us, myself included, operating through our ego, the separation of self. And so I want to give a little bit of an intro for the two of them, and then there's another piece that I want to share. So Marie was born in Pretoria, South Africa. She's both South African and German. Growing up amongst sisters, she was always aware of various dynamics and female interactions that felt, part of the exile conversation that we'll get to. And out of the four of her siblings, she was definitely considered the black sheep. And relationship patterns have always fascinated her, as well as male-female power dynamics. So she describes herself in this way: I am a highly sensitive soul. I love the natural world more than words can express. Animals and small children are drawn to me. And I'm a single mother of a 12-year-old son, as well as a 12-year-old Swiss shepherd. And the second guest, Hulani, is a spiritual healer, sacred sound musician, and wisdom keeper of deep feminine mysteries. She's known for her peaceful yet powerful catalytic energy. And for more than 25 years, she's been teaching and working with people to prepare them for this time of radical change. She has the clarity and uncanny ability to guide individuals into embracing their full potential and reclaim their innate power. Her latest ebook, entitled Mystic in the Mainstream, In Service to the Wholeness of the World, can be downloaded at hulani.com. That's hulani.com. I will also have that link in the show notes. So something really interesting happened in our show together, and it feels so important that I share about it before we get into the show, because it's been a tremendous gift and learning for me. Probably about 10 minutes into the show, I got this huge wave of nausea, and then I had this internal voice saying, black sheep is racist. That statement is racist. And it was like I had this panic of like, what are we doing? And I will say at the same time, what was interesting for me about it is I didn't stop the show and say, whoa, I have this thing coming up. And I didn't stop the show because I was afraid of, interrupting the experience, or I overrode something that was really important to me. And as I journey through power reclamation, which is, you know, the essence of disidentifying with my conditioning and further identifying with the loving awareness and presence that I am, the I am awareness, I am humbly continually seeing places where I don't stand in my power. And I didn't stand in my power because I didn't say anything. And I did what I do often when I'm wanting to keep the peace, which it probably would have been a very peaceful conversation. In fact, it was when we debriefed it later, is I tuck it away to deal with it later on my own. And what was so amazing is I was able to reach out to both of them and say, hey, this has came up for me. What's your thought about this term? And it sparked a really rich conversation between all of us. So I want to share a little bit about the research that I've done as a result, and also the vision that the three of us have come up with around our desire to no longer use that term and find something more appropriate and ultimately less exiling and racial. So I started with research about from an agricultural lens. And so as I researched the origins of this word from that perspective, I learned that it was based on the idea that black sheep were less valuable than white ones because it was more difficult to dye their wool different colors. And I'm also aware that, you know, many of the herds, it was more common to have white sheep than black sheep. So part of where that came from is just the actual anomaly of not having, you know, it was a rarity. It's a rarity to have a black sheep. In fact, even where I live with a lot of different wild foxes, and the majority of the foxes are red, but there is a black fox, and actually a black fox that has a baby. So it's kind of a rarer mammal color in some of these animal herds. So when I was researching about this agricultural, they also went on to say that in the 1500s, the color black was also considered the devil's mark. So, you know, black sheep was starting to get a lot of different projections placed on it. And then by the 1700s, the term was basically widely used as it is today from the English dictionary, which says a black sheep is an idiom used to describe a member of a group different from the rest, especially within a family who doesn't fit in. It's often an exile or someone who appears to be a misfit. Or I even read a couple of different dictionary definitions saying that it's someone who, I don't think it was takes advantage of. Now I can't remember what I read, but somebody who is sort of shames the family because of their actions. So as I researched to educate myself about the racial implications of this term and its connection to marginalizing and exiling colored people, I found the following excerpt from a man. His name is Jeremy Heligar. He's a writer for Pop magazines and an author of two travelogue memoirs. The first is called, Is It True What They Say About Black Men? And the second is called Storms in Africa. And in this article, which is titled 12 Everyday Expressions That Are Actually Racist, he says this: black sheep may seem like an innocent enough phrase, even in its describing something that is not particularly aspirational. But it's just an example of how racism is subtly built into the English language that most of us don't notice. So he begins by quoting what therapist D. Watts Jones wrote in 2004. Here's the quote. The English language is in bed with racism, even though most of us are usually unaware of that fact. Everyday language reminds African Americans in matter-of-fact ways that our color is related to some form of exile. End of quote. The article that he writes includes, in addition to black sheep, it includes a list of other common expressions that slip through most people's tongues without deeper consideration. One of them is blackmail, which is actually a term that's meant to represent extortion. So as I read the list, you'll see that each one has a negative connotation. Black mark represents disrepute. Black ball, rejection. Blacklist, banishment. Black market, represent illicitness. So he closes the article with this quote: "Regardless of the intentions of the user of these expressions, such usage colludes with racism," end of quote. So what I have found, and in my own journey of teaching and continuing to embody power reclamation myself, which I define really as coming back to disidentifying with my conditioning and embracing and embodying the fullness of my presence, my loving awareness, the I am presence. I talk about the power of reflecting on and examining these habituated ways of expressing ourselves in the world, especially when it's coming innocently through conditioning that we don't think about, and the power of being able to actually reflect with each other or even give one another feedback if we feel that we are operating from places that are just conditioned, whether it's the language we use or it's the behaviors that we're operating through. So in this conversation, I felt incredibly grateful for the wisdom of my body, because I think the body sensation of feeling nauseous had me slow down to tune back into my body, even though I was in conversation with Maria and Hulani. And as I tuned back into my body, and I actually, as we were talking, I took a moment to feel the nausea in my stomach. I had this, literally this wave of energy rise. And then I had this thought of, oh my gosh, black sheep is racist. And I'm kind of embarrassed to say in a way that it never dawned on me, but it dawned on me in that moment, which was the gift. And so as a result, I feel that my body wisdom was asking me to look at a blind spot. And fortunately, it opened a beautiful dialogue, as I mentioned, for the three of us to talk about what that meant for us. And because for me, I just want to create these kinds of forums where we can collectively dismantle the language that reinforces all forms of exile. You know, racism, sexism, ageism, classism, homophobia, nationalism, religious prejudice, or xenophobia. I mean, there's just so many ways that many of us feel exiled. And so it was beautiful to be able to have an exchange with these two women. And I even texted a dear friend who have been in a book club around when we were reading a book called White Fragility and really trying to educate ourselves about the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement. So I did speak with Maria and Hulani, as I mentioned, and we've decided that we all want to explore an alternative phrase moving forward to essentially to represent those of us who feel exiled. And we often feel exiled because we're at the fringe of mainstream culture. We're the ones that see patterns that are dissonant, that create discord, that are actually incongruent with the feeling of wholeness, with the wellspring of our hearts. And often by doing so, by speaking up, you know, whether it's systems of power over or interactions in our personal lives where there's some power plays that feel, like I said, incongruent, taking a stand or speaking up about these things doesn't often make us the popular one. You know, it can actually cost our sense of belonging. It can cost our sense of connection with others. It can, you know, even for myself, it can cost me connection with myself because I feel guilty about what it is that I see if I know that people don't want to hear it. And I know that comes from my early conditioning because I would see things and it wasn't really what the people around me wanted to see or talk about. And so I would often hear, oh, you're just too sensitive or you're making that up, or and it would get dismissed. So we are going to come up with a new term. It's likely that we will be doing some more conversations together. So if you like what we share today and you find yourself one of these beloved exiles who are bringing a very specific, particular, important energy into the world, please join us again. So the last thing I want to mention is the article that I referred to earlier by Jeremy 12 everyday expressions that are actually racist. I am going to include that link in the show notes. So next up, Maria and Hulani.
Okay, here we are again. Welcome back, Hulani and Marie. Feels like we had so much that we were touching on in our last conversation together that it was all three of us wanted to dive a little deeper into one particular topic, which is basically the experience of being a black sheep. We could also stretch that into part of our conversation last time about the wounded feminine is, and I probably would say just wounded humanity, is being exiled and all the different ways that we become exiled. So I just thought we would open up the show today, just maybe both of you speaking to what does it mean to be exiled in your life and how you're experiencing that in the world and in general, however you want to take it.
This is something that has been a prevalent pattern in my life since early age, as I'm sure it is for many. It just shows itself because of the nature of the spirit that is the black sheep and does become exiled as a result of that, but also for the feminine at large. And for me, being exiled means our voice is not being received. There's no room for our voice to be expressed. Where people endeavor to shut us down so that we're not heard. And even to the extreme of being kept away from our people. Whatever that expression is, whether it's our blood family or whether it's a soul family that we have built throughout the years of our journey. And the feminine at large, I feel, has been exiled and continues to be exiled through misogyny. So as she rises, as the feminine rises, there's a polarity that at the same time is trying to shut that rise down and keep us small and in the closet. And when we develop the courage to speak up and speak out, we find ourselves often alone in that speaking up because we're standing on the edge of something new. We're standing in a place that's rocking the boat with the existing social and cultural structures. We're saying no to something that the rest of humanity has been saying yes to for centuries. So suddenly we're in an arena going, okay, this is my truth. Where is everybody? And when people are curious enough to show up to listen, we get both sides of the coin, those in agreement and those who are not in agreement.
Yeah. Do you have a specific example before we move to Marie that you could share about how this is playing out currently in your life or a big pattern that has been playing out over time?
Currently, it's not playing out in my life. I feel that I've built enough substance where the people around me are in alignment with who I am, who I'm becoming, and what I'm sharing in the world. And I think that's ultimately where we find ourselves standing if we hold steadfast in our sovereignty. Where I remember it playing out was mostly in my teenage years when I was finding my voice and speaking it and how the backlash that I would get, where I was being called the black sheep, not specifically in my immediate family, but my extended family, particularly around religion, because I would always speak up when they would tout the Bible, passages from the Bible, and then in the same moment judge people of other religions that were not in the same alignment. And I found that very unchristian-like. And I would say so, which they did not like.
Not well received.
No, it was not well received. So I could see clearly that they weren't standing in the truth of the Bible for what they were, for what verse they were bringing forward. Mm-hmm. I was not a follower of the Bible per se. I went through Sunday school, but my religion was something other than the church. But I think because of that, because I was standing on the periphery, I could see more clearly the patterns that were taking place. And because I was the messenger, then I would get the backlash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the whole notion of a black sheep, is that it's basically someone who has a message that no one wants to hear, or has a particular kind of medicine of naming the obvious or the things that seem so counterintuitive or in that way contradictory, the example you just described, and then kind of being shunned for it. So mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And we can elaborate on the definition. Marie, where do you want to take it from here? Do you want to add to the definition? Do you want to share a little bit more about your experience with Black Sheep energy?
I can very much identify with what Yolani just told us. Mm-hmm. In my case, I had the feeling very early on in my life that I was somehow different than everyone in my immediate family. I had three sisters, and both my parents made me understand that I'm the difficult one or the odd one out. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it as something positive when I was younger. I felt isolated and exiled and lonely in that. And I didn't understand why people were scared of me, because that's the feeling I had, is that my immediate family was somehow afraid of me or of what I had to say or of my temperament. Or I'm actually quite a peaceful person and calm, but there are some things that just trigger my buttons, and then I just can't take it, and I get severe. Then I will say something. I won't just stay quiet, and I could never do it. So I was always aware I was the black sheep. I wasn't always comfortable with it. Nowadays, I am completely and totally fine with it. If I'm seen that way, because we grow. But I think the most severe for me was as well in my teenage years, because it's a very intense time, I think, for everyone. And your hormones go haywire, and you know, you learn to understand yourself in a completely different relationship to everyone. But it's also where I think I experienced my most hurt in being the black sheep. And also, regarding the church, I had very similar themes, because I came to understand what the Bible told us about Christ as something completely different than what I was generally told at church. And I always had this feeling that if Jesus Christ were looking down on us right now, or at us, or from wherever he would be, he would also feel the same, that the world was misunderstanding completely his message. So I've also, when I was younger, actually my youth, I worked a lot with the youth in church, because it was so important for me to change this in order to make people understand, for me, the way of understanding what Christ's message was about inclusivity and was about unconditional love in a way that we will never understand as a human. So I tried for a while until I just realized I'm reaching a boundary here with a church that would not accept the wholeness and the oneness and the total and completely unconditional, there's no condition to this love that we have inherited. We don't have to do anything for it. So yeah, very much understand what you were saying, Yolani. Had similar experiences until I decided that this is not for me. It conflicts too much and it takes too much energy for me to try and convince people that they misunderstand the Bible, because most of the people in church choose to understand it in a different way than I do. And for me, to be exiled is for me twofold. So it's to stand out, but not to always stand up for something positive in the way that society sees it. And everything you do and say is noticed by a few in a positive way, but by most in a negative way. So that's what my experience basically.
Yeah. What was that last statement? That's what your parents, did you say? I didn't catch that last statement you just made.
So for me, to be exiled means, in a way, to be noticed.
Yeah.
And it's not like choose it. It's being a black sheep between white sheep. People notice you. Mm-hmm. And not everyone likes that. Mm-hmm. Not everyone likes noticing something that's different. And you're not always aware of what are you doing differently, or what's wrong, or why are the people looking at you in a different way, or why are they receiving you in a different way than the person next to you? So I think being a black sheep and being exiled will always get you noticed, even if you try to hide. Like I was actually quite introverted and shy, and I didn't like attention, but people were always noticing me and what I said and making comments and hurting me. Mm-hmm. So I think mostly when you're a black sheep, especially in your younger years, you are being noticed for what society deems negative aspects. Mm-hmm. And that makes you feel more and more excellent. And it makes you feel like very alone in a way that you can't even understand as a child or as a teenager. Mm-hmm. Because there are people surrounding you, but why do you feel so alone? Until you start connecting with other black sheep, and that's what actually saved me or made me accept myself more.
As you actually found more that were also being exiled, and you could gather together.
In my teenage years, actually, I realized consciously that I am drawn to people who are different.
Mm-hmm.
And that I chose my friends, or those friends chose me, that were somehow not the norm, or it's not a great term, I know, but that were somehow also standing out, or that were maybe a bit weird or a bit arty or a bit up there. And I had a very, very soft spot for those people. Mm. My heart just opened up when I got to know one of them, and I could recognize them from a mile away.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so powerful because both of you are speaking from where this originates. And it did for me too, was in my elementary school, junior high, and high school were probably it was the time where it all got rooted in my own psyche. And to your point, Marie, I didn't know that I stood out. I didn't think that I was any different. I just was doing what I was doing. And so the people pleaser, the one of me that wanted to belong and fit in, was completely scrambled because it felt like being myself meant that I would either be put on a pedestal or I would be knocked down over and over again. And so it wasn't clear what was safe to do in order to get basic need of belonging met. And there's such an innocence to that phase where we just don't know that we're that different. And I resonate also with, I've always been drawn to people who are outside of the box. And I wouldn't have known that at the time. I wouldn't have been able to put that language on it as a teenager, but as an adult, I am always drawn to people who are doing things a little bit differently and sort of shaking up the status quo. So is there any other comments you two want to make on this before I ask another pointed question?
Well, the word that came up for me was misfit.
Yeah, exactly.
All us misfits and weird creatives.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you really can't classify us. Mm-hmm. People try to pigeonhole, but it's impossible. And I think it's a little bit elusive, too, because just when you think you've got us pigeonholed, everything changes. And you become something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if we tie this back into sisterhood that we were talking about the last time, my experience there was my soul sisters were trying to pin me down just when they thought they were getting comfortable with where I was at, something would change, and then they would disappear. They would just not be there anymore. And then new sisters would arrive and then they would disappear. So I could never really hold on to any of them as steadfast friends that I could rely on.
I noticed Marie and I are both shaking our heads. Yes. So Marie, do you want to say more about that, of just people coming and going?
Yes, I have. Definitely. That is also my experience until this day. Mm-hmm. I want to believe that it actually teaches you to rely on yourself and on your heart and on your intuition, and that everything you're actually searching for isn't to be found in another person, and it's to be found into you. But it does feel like a very lonely journey sometimes. Because you have these human instincts that you want to hold on to people, and you want to rely on people, and you want to have some kind of permanence in your life and in your friendships. But same experience.
Yeah.
And regarding my early years, I just wanted to add something quickly, because it's just, I just thought of, you know, think of these things. I just remembered that in kindergarten, I can remember the person I felt most loved towards was a little black girl. And I was in a German kindergarten, so it's basically blonde German kids there. Even though I was in South Africa, but there was a black girl who was also German speaking. And my heart just opened up every time I saw her. She was tiny and little. And I still remember she often fell asleep in kindergarten. And I would place a blanket over her like a little mom. And I was just, I just had this extra love for her. And if I think about her today, it's just, I loved her a lot. And I don't know whether you sense who needs this more than people who have different kind of background or different kind of upbringing. And talking about feminine energy, and the weird thing was, since kindergarten, it was actually the boys that were very drawn to me. And in kindergarten, obviously, it's not the reasons that we will be able to pinpoint, but I sometimes wonder how that came about, because surely they were drawn to feminine energy. I don't know what it was, but I think in kindergarten, I played more with boys, even though I wasn't rough. I was just me. Mm-hmm. I was gentle and soft and warm and creative. So that's just an interesting thing I thought of. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first day I was actually my first day at school, at proper school. I felt very different than everyone else, and I couldn't place my finger on why. And I consciously, I think it was the first time I consciously had the feeling that I was different. But I looked around me, and because they were doing a little welcome dance in our courtyard of the school, and it was, I think, sixth graders doing the dance in an inside circle, and then the outside circle was us new first graders. And everyone was so excited to take part in this dance, and I refused. And I just looked at the story, and I couldn't explain to myself why. I just looked at the story, and I decided, no ways I'm doing this. There is no ways. And it wasn't like I was a shy child. I and I knew some of them from kindergarten. I just refused. And it was the first day in my life I remember consciously knowing that something different about me. Why am I why is everyone enjoying this except me? Mm-hmm. So it's little, I think it's little experiences like this that make you wonder why I'm so different than everyone else. And you can't find the answers until much later.
Yeah. That's an amazing story because it was so early in life where you just knew something about that dance was off and it wasn't aligned and you were able to say no. And it sounds like you weren't overpowered to do it by teachers or anyone else. You can actually have your own moment, which I don't know how often that actually happens. I feel often myself, I was forced, my no became more forcing me to do something than honoring my no, which was very confusing. So, Hilani, do you want to add anything to that?
No, nothing is coming forward to expand on that other than agreeing with you where our no's aren't often received fully.
Right. It
becomes an excuse to have power over.
Yeah, exactly.
When someone stands firmly.
Yeah.
So I remember lots of experiences of being overpowered by adults and not honored for my uniqueness.
Yeah. So we're building sort of a framework here of this starts very early. It happens to certain people. They don't even really know it's happening because they don't realize they're different. All of us are speaking to that. And then there's this exile that comes with it. But Marie, you had said something when we touched in a couple of weeks ago about looking, I wrote something down. Oh, you were talking about why the role is so important. And you know, what is the medicine of a scapegoat? And I think what we were talking about is when you speak about what's real, you know, in the dynamics and in the energy between people and community and systems at large, it really bucks the system. So I wonder if we could spend a little bit of time, and there's many things, threads I want to go back to, but just talking about for those of us, and definitely in adult phases right now, who are really struggling with, oh my gosh, my friends are turning over again. I'm losing everything again. I can't, you know, hold on to anything. I'm being asked to turn towards myself over and over again. I'm learning how to befriend isolation. I'm learning how to find peace in the fact that I'm never going to really belong. And so what's the medicine? What do you both feel like you've been able to bring forward into the world because of this experience? And how could that be helpful for other people to hear?
Well, for me, I remember a couple of instances in public school and high school. Public school, my writing skill was being honed, and I would always write about things that hadn't yet to be conceived, like a house built underground. I remember in grade 7 writing a story about a particular kind of architecture of house that would be mostly submerged underground. Kind of interesting for grade 7. And then in high school, in art class, I would always do things that were abstract that my art teacher could not understand. She would always call me up and have me explain what this was. So to really, I think the medicine that is there really is truth and love that's at the center of it. But to really take our medicine out there, to really stand in it, we have to step beyond the patterns of separation to know that we are the divine in motion, that we are the messenger of the divine, that we are an evolutionary force, and that for some particular reason our soul has been gifted with or charged with or blessed with, or all three, to be the messenger of the next wave. And in my shamanic practice, I actually, at one point when I was feeling very alone, I tracked it back to the first incarnation on Earth. Who was I? What was I doing? And then tracked it forward into the moment. And every single lifetime, I was doing the same thing. I was in a Renaissance period of humanity. I was standing on an evolutionary edge, speaking something that was unheard of, or breaking a pattern that just did not serve the people or the planet. So it was always consistent there in my soul's journey. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can walk away from it. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then walk away, because it rises up inside of us. It's not something we decide to do. It's just there to speak it, which takes it to a place that I call holy exile. And maybe we can speak to that a little later, but
yeah,
I'll leave it at that point.
Okay, we'll come back to holy exile. I love that. Yeah, it seems that part of the medicine that you're describing is shaking up the status quo, breaking down systems that no longer serve the whole, because
absolutely,
that is where the separation is. It's keeps getting indoctrinated into the systems and into the minds of all things that are influencing young humans.
So. Mm-hmm. And as Marie said earlier, if we turn inward for solace, mm-hmm, and really tune into the presence that's there, the beloved that's there, we're not really alone.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And I will add a layer and then Marie, I want to hear from you about how you would describe. But I find, because I'm fascinated with neuroscience, so I'm really into the spiritual aspect of us, but I also am really enamored with our mammalian nature as a species. And so, you know, from my study of the brain, there's a whole social engagement system that has evolved beyond just the triune brain that basically says we absolutely need to feel a sense of belonging. It says, you know, basically with our species. I don't know if that's true, if you can find it in other species. I find a lot of that in nature with animals, with some humans. But I wonder if there is, and both of you, either of you could respond to this, and then I want to come back to you, Marie. But is it just about with the divine spirit essence of our nature? Or is there a belonging when we're incarnated in a human form that we actually need to feel with one another?
Yes and yes. Mm-hmm. And I think where I would speak to that, the belonging at a planetary level, is what I speak to in holy exile.
Okay.
Where we break free from the familial constellations and the mammalian resonance, and we really build the substance of a new universe that specific souls on the planet resonate with and show up.
Okay, we are definitely coming back to holy exile. So I want to just come back to you, Marie. Do you want to add anything about what you think the medicine is for people who feel a little bit lost in this zone of being the exile? Like, what could you say to them about how it serves the world?
It serves as a light. The world is full of darkness, and the world is trying to hide so many essential truths for generations already, and we are here to uncover that. So I agree with Yolani, it's to do with truth, and it's to do with love, and that is our medicine. This is our mission, and we obviously came on Earth with the commitment to accept this mission. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's easy. People don't often want to hear the truth and the whole truth. But I do feel that we have, I don't know with you, but I totally believe that you have the same experience with other people, but I have this way of leading people to the truth that they are scared of and taking the fear away. And I think the world needs so much more. And to us, this comes naturally. We don't sometimes know what the big deal is of just speaking the truth. But that's what we trained as, because since we were small, we were the ones standing up for fairness, standing up if we didn't understand something or if something was not correct or if something wasn't done out of the bigger love or the bigger hope or if the bigger picture was missing. We were the ones to, we were like the signal. I think the black sheep is definitely the barometer of things that are not working in a family or in another system or in society. And this is our training for later on, that we just feel, well, this is what we do, like it or not, but we're not afraid of the truth. And this is totally, I think this is tied to our purpose on earth and in the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're illuminating another part of it, which when we talk about the black sheep being about love and truth, I think our cultural norms is say something nice or don't say anything at all. And that is not love. That is not love when you try to protect someone from their ego so that they don't have to hear something they don't want to hear. Or I remember as a kid being asked to sit on this man's lap in the neighborhood and he would ask for a kiss and give you a piece of bazooka. And I hated it. And I remember not wanting to do it and being told, you know, don't embarrass him. This, you know, you have to do this. And just how early that gets brought in of don't. And I think that's why so many people, men and women, have a hard time actually saying the truth, is because we're conditioned to be nice. And that's not across the board, but I just wanted to pluck that out because that feels like such an important part around saying the truth. With love often is fierce, and it's calling things out that people don't want to hear. And I've had friends not want to connect after I brought something, but I have seen them evolve. And that's when I know that love was at play, and I can be with the, you know, the loss of the friendship. And oftentimes we will circle back, but what does it take to love so fiercely without all that conditioning, I think is a huge part of the medicine that we bring.
Yes. For sure. Absolutely.
So I want to add another layer just because it's right here. It's the shadow side of that. So I have a couple of friends. We talk about this, and I, in fact, one of mine, you know, she so beautifully will bring the truth. And the truth is something we could actually, you know, like clarify. What does that exactly mean? Whose truth? What truth? Absolute truth? Our personal truth? But she's a seer, just like we are. And so she'll name something, but she was going through a pattern where she wasn't clearing out her projections first. And so the channel, the filter was getting distorted, and people weren't wanting to hear it because it had a flavor of her aggression. And we tracked it. And, you know, I've looked at that in myself of like, when am I seeing something from pure, clear love? And when am I seeing something from my own unintegrated hurt that I'm still, you know, of course, for the rest of our lives. So I wonder if either of you could speak to that side of the shadow, if you've noticed that in your life, if you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I think it's essential that as light bearers, that we do our own work, that we scavenge the darkness for those little bits that are unintegrated, to be empty vessels of that truth and love. It's absolutely essential. And also part of that shadow is knowing that you have that medicine where you go looking for those rifts in the people that you're with, instead of just sitting back and waiting for something to show itself, which to me tells me I was meant to see it, versus me scoping it out and you know, digging the knife in. See, you know, which probably comes from our own childhood. Or that pattern of enjoying the drama of what we stir up.
Right. I love the honesty. Yeah. I think that can be a shadow in the pattern, in this medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Marie, did you want to add anything to that before I...
Yeah, I think we can all identify with that. So we are humans. Mm-hmm. I also constantly test myself and ask myself, I'm self-critical when I endeavor in uncovering truth, whether I'm doing it with a pure heart and whether I'm doing it for the benefit of everyone or for the sake of the bigger truth. Because, mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes obviously our emotions get in the way and all our history with someone. Yeah, I think that is an ongoing journey that we will probably find ourselves dealing with forever. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't discourage us from seeking the truth. I think if we see it in someone else, we can try to love it, lovingly address it. I think a lot of this work is also, unfortunately, because that's, again, the topic of belonging and losing people all the time, is that we have to let go all the time. We have to let go and say, you know, maybe my path with you is over. Maybe it's not helping you to have me by your side all the time. And to be honest about when a path has come to an end,
yeah,
or to pause and to let go and trust, I've given you my little push that I was here for, I believe, and now it's up to you. And you're under no obligation to do something with this, but I cannot be by your side for you to fulfill this destiny that it is your path. I think it's sometimes challenging.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But I think you're teasing out another piece of the medicine, because if we're not attached to keeping friendships, forms, things in place the way that they are, we are willing to know in our own beings and body when something has hit a wall or it's complete, like hit a wall needs a pause, or it's complete and there's a bowing and there's a letting go, even longtime friendships. So I think that to me has been a part of that I've had to really keep cultivating, is trusting my own knowing when something's done. Because if I can see myself slip into my own self-criticism of like, well, maybe I'm just not being patient enough. Or maybe, you know, like Kalani said, maybe I'm digging the knife in and I'm seeing, you know, my seer is trying to bring too much to the surface and this person's not asking for it. And yet if I'm going to be in this close relationship, I want it to feel like we can actually own our shadows together, because that's where the liberation is. So it's definitely a piece of medicine I think is important to tease out, along with the fierce love, is also the acknowledgement when something is complete, and to do the grieving process. And no one has to be blamed or wrong. It's just, that's what is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also having the skill set to be present to the projections.
Yes.
You can stand in the truth and in that big love and say nothing, and the person can be throwing it at you because they don't want to feel what your presence is bringing up in them. Mm-hmm. So they project it back onto you in a myriad of ways, as you know, whether it be verbally or energetically or both. So there's a skill set that goes along with this medicine to keep our center and place of belonging in the medicine and attuning to what is wanting to come through and to be real in the face of inauthenticity.
Yeah. Even when the people don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And I want to highlight what you just said, standing in the fire when people, whether we open our mouths or not, people project all sorts of things, both kind of elating us, you know, putting us on a pedestal or knocking us down, and like how to stay steady. The only way that I'm able to do that is what you said earlier, Hilani, is staying in the connection with my divine nature. But my psychology and my human conditioning has a whole other journey going on. And so that to me is the biggest part of this medicine, is me befriending over and over these wounded, scared parts of my human self that just don't even know how to digest that kind of exile or that kind of feeling misunderstood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a razor's edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've gotten to the point where from a resonance point of view, I know when it's theirs clearly, mm-hmm. or if there's some tidbits left for me, I know it's coming from them, but there's some tidbits there for me to address within myself.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I've got homework to do so that it doesn't rise up again the next day. Right.
Yeah. Do either of you have tips for other people of how you cultivate that kind of resonance of discerning when there's material up for ourselves to work on and when it's just purely coming from the other person?
Well, most of my work is shamanic, so often I can do it on the fly, mm-hmm. in that it's either an internal envisioning of me just swiping my arm through my energy field and moving it on, or literally swooping it with my arm or a feather. Or when I have space unto myself, I do something what I call inner sync. And I take my presence inward and go through all the layers, from the physical to the emotional to the mental to the spiritual, and just clearing it out. Mm. Bringing the presence to it, and then bringing presence inside my body, like to look inside my body from presence into all the caverns of this temple, mm-hmm. to see if there's any residue.
Great. So your approach is beautiful. It's very shamanic, very energetic. And Marie, do you want to add anything before we move on?
Yes, it's always this dichotomy between, like you say, being in the human realm and dealing with all these emotions. And I have felt a lot of hurt in my life. So I'm sorry, but if you're a black sheep out there, this is part of the journey.
Yeah.
Not always. Yeah. It's not always great. You will hurt like probably no other one person will be able to hurt. You will get hurt. You will feel all the hurt in the world. And you will have to try and not let that dim your shine. And for me, it has been a journey of, I think it's a simultaneous journey of self-acceptance and self-love, is to accept that you can trust your own intuition. You are this wonderful divine, and we all are. We all, every human, is this wonderful divine being with gifts that society does not always acknowledge, but you can actually trust your own feeling. And for me, it's if you imagine yourself as a light and there's a moment that you're not sure, go back into that light and look for all the shadow. I can describe it as little dots of shadows. Mm. Also, almost like Yolani also described it, look for where it is in your body. Where does it not feel right? Mm-hmm. And it, that never lies. Whether it's yourself that you're trying to analyze for projection or for other motives, or another person, you will feel when the truth is light. Love is light. I think it's basically the same frequency, and you will feel it. We can be attuned to this if we allow ourselves to imagine ourselves as light. And for that, you have to have a certain amount of self knowledge, and you will have to have traveled a bit in your life to the point where you can actually say you have a certain amount of self love and you accept your mission, and you accept that you are a divine being of light. Which is some days, I think, easier and sometimes not. But as a being of light, you are very aware of where the dark spots are, and that those are the spots of untruth or addiction or human error.
Yeah. Thank you. It feels important because you're both giving different entry points of how do you do this from the inside out? How do you tune into that frequency? And I think, you know, I will add one more layer because I agree wholeheartedly. Like, what does it take to trust our intuition is so critical. And I just know for myself that that has not been an easy journey because I have a significant amount of trauma that will interfere with me knowing if I can trust what I'm sensing. Partly because I would see so much and then people would tell me that's not what's happening. And so then that was as a child. So I started to really doubt what I was seeing to be true. So for me, this has been such a big journey of learning to trust my intuition. And I wish I could, but I'm not there. I can't do it by myself all the time. Sometimes I have to call someone I really trust and say, this thing's coming up. This is what's happening for me. This is what I see. And I feel like there might be some reaction inside of me, which means there's something of mine. And I need them to help me tease it out because sometimes that reaction is about the other person. And sometimes that reaction is that same energy of shutting myself down that used to happen externally that now happens internally. I know that might sound confusing. What?
No, it means you can't read it. You need the witness consciousness to be able to look back at it. So it's, you know, I bow to you for recognizing when you need that outside witness, which is, I think, something we need to speak to here in that to ask for that outside assistance when we know we need it.
Here's the trick for me. And then we're going to move to holy exile. I have to find someone that has some energetic of black sheep because they get the dilemma of being a seer.
Yeah.
And that very hook I have to be able to be with someone who's not going to put their agenda on, that has the ability to fully expand out into just being in the larger field of the exploration of the energy and the patterns of emotion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So we've done a lot of sharing about what it feels like to be exiled, the scapegoat. And now I want to talk about this evolutionary leap to relating to our exile as a holy path. And so maybe you want to start, because you kicked off the concept, Yolani. What is holy exile? And how do we cultivate that?
Speaking from my personal experience, I find that once we have come to recognize that we are exiled for a particular reason, like specific to our truth, that this is our purpose and we're coming to stand more firmly in it. I'm not saying it's 100%. There are moments when we waver. But we come to an intuitive knowing that this is our medicine. It is what we've come to do and be. And we need a period of time to really gestate in the medicine of it without outside influences, anyone. And that can look like any number of ways, from hanging out in a cave, a temple, in the backyard in your favorite garden, walking in the forest every day by yourself, you name it, whatever works for you, where you can really connect in and be tuned to that medicine, to that frequency, and really accept it as a holy mission that serves the wholeness of the world. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, I'm getting shivers as I'm speaking this. When we really do that, when we say yes with our entire being and body, then something happens in the universe. Something, there's an exchange that takes place between our inner being and the divine at large that becomes a cauldron of alchemy that starts to change our cellular structure and our energy so that our light can shine even brighter, so that there's a radiance that the world can see without us speaking anything.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you for that. I think what I want to highlight there is to anyone out there that doubts, questions, or judges themselves when they need a lot of solitude and need to go inward more often than people around them, to trust it. Because I fought it for a long time, because I was raised to be a very social, extroverted person. But what I found to be my pathway of healing was actually slowing down, turning inward, spending a lot of time alone, and having those roots that you're describing begin to grow so deeply that exile no longer has the same feeling that it once had.
Right. We become supercharged.
Yeah.
And I find that the earth, Mother Earth, responds as well, in that she beefs up our roots from our feet and our root system in our physical and energetic body. It's like she's celebrating. Yes, finally, you've come to the truth of your own knowing. Let's celebrate and get on with it.
Yeah.
It's like Goliath walking into the Roman amphitheater with the lion facing the lion, right? Mm. I don't know what the goddess version is of that, but I'm sure there is one.
Yeah. Well, that is such a great exclamation mark. Marie, do you want to add anything on to this whole evolutionary notion of holy exile?
Well, I think it's a pattern that you have to make peace with the fact that the bigger reason you were being pushed out wasn't to punish you. It was to prepare you that this is where you belong. You cannot be amongst everyone all the time. You have to sometimes remove yourself into your own strength, because you are so powerful. And this is where you recharge. And this is where you become aware of what the truth is, where your power is. And we are so conditioned, as you say, socially, to always be inclusive, always be around, always be entertaining, always include everyone. And the reason we feel so lonely, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. But that, because this is simultaneously the strength of the black sheep, is that he is able to stand by himself outside of things, be alone in a way. But it's not something negative. The negative connotation, I think, comes from society. I also think we have something very innate in our brains that wants us to belong. I feel the same. But I can tune out of it and know in this bigger sense of the truth that being outside of everything for a while is the healthiest thing I can do for myself. I think it comes with experience and with age that you accept this is actually something good and something you have to honor, like you say, not to run away from.
Yeah.
The need if it arises.
Yeah. So beautiful. I think that would be my wish, and maybe you two would want to add anything as we start to wrap up, for anyone that is on this journey of being a seer and then feeling so isolated and feeling the internal dilemma or conflict of wanting to belong and feel connected, but also feeling sort of depleted by it and needing to turn backwards, and that there is something inherently trustworthy about that. But it doesn't end there. That's not the end of the story where you're sitting in isolation. There's an expansion that happens when we cultivate that much time surrendering into solitude, into whether it's 10 minutes a day or an hour in the forest or any of the things that Hilani had mentioned before, whatever it is that we prioritize our sovereign, sacred being as our consort, as our lover. Anything else you two would want to add as we wrap up? Eight of wishes for people who are on this journey.
To really recognize the magic in this adventure. That in the beginning, we're coming to know our medicine. Then there's a period of planting seeds of our medicine. And then there comes that moment where we plant our stake in the ground.
Talk about getting chills. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we've been taught. That is holy exile, planting the stake.
Yes. Planting the stake is holy exile. Mm-hmm. And that even in doing that, we need to retreat for self-care and self-love and to listen more deeply too for the next wave, because creation is an ebb and flow. So when we ebb with creation to go inward and listen deeply and take care, we're meant to do that. We're not meant to be with the groups of people. It's that communion with the beloved. And then when it flows back out again, we illuminate with what we have heard and seen in the mystery.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And really, when we think about it, it's our natural way of being in the fullness of our humanity. It's like a human being with all chakras rocking.
Yeah. I love the image of that. Thank you, Hilani. Marie, do you want to add anything else?
Yes, if we use the picture of the black sheep, then if you picture white sheep as most of society, and then there's black sheep here and a black sheep there, and most of the time they don't even see each other, but they are there. And I think what really helps me is if I connect with other black sheep, and you will identify them. If you're a black sheep, you know intuitively how to identify with them. And this creates a new family. And this is the family that you were always wishing you had. It is actually these people. It is not the people you were born into. It is not your immediate family. It will never be like that because that is not your journey. But what you do if you retreat into your own silence is you connect to all of the divine, and it becomes a like a ring of fire, because we're not just humans. More especially, we are divine souls. And the divine is not something like God sitting on his throne, looking down on us. It's right there when you're by yourself in nature, wherever you choose to be. This is where you are the least alone that you can be on this earth, because you connect to the divine in everyone and every other creature and every tree and every seed and to the planet. So, yes, I want to encourage people to, if they feel they are a black sheep, to not despair, because it's a beautiful journey he led it.
It sounds like it's a beautiful journey if we allow it, but also if we find each other.
Yes. And
so I'm hoping that this show today will attract those who feel what we've gone through, feel the loneliness that precedes the holy exile stake in the ground, that feels that disorientation, and that there's more and more of us that can gather and bolster and amplify one another's power. And this love that we've talked about today, like how do we internally deepen so that that is just pouring out, like you said, Hilani. So when people are around us, essentially they feel it without speaking a word. So may this medicine continue to shine. And thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you want more, you can subscribe to this channel. This will automatically queue up the next episode for your listening. If you have a burning question or topic you want to learn more about, please send an email to Ask Anne Marie. The direct link is located in the show notes. And please leave a review. This keeps me inspired and focused to bring you more. If you want to learn more about my work as a power reclamation guide, leadership coach, and organizational culture consultant, you can visit my websites in the notes. Thank you again for joining today.